from the Palatial Yet Not Overly Ostentatious Studios of the Infinity Sports Network here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to what is a Monday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all great local Infinity Sports Network affiliates, SiriusXM, Channel 375, and the free Odyssey app. 888-710-4ISN is the number to jump on in. That's 888-710-4476. You could always get at me on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That is Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Lionel Hollins, the former NBA head coach, he's going to join us coming up at 4:20 p.m. Eastern time. And then at 5 p.m. Eastern time, John Fanta is going to stop by as we will get set to preview the NBA draft that is right around the corner. We go from Game 7 of the NBA Finals on Sunday night to the NBA draft happening on Wednesday. And you also did have yesterday, on the day of Game 7 of the NBA Finals, Kevin Durant get traded to the Houston Rockets. So there's a lot going on in the basketball world. Let me start the show off by congratulating on this Monday the Oklahoma City Thunder on winning a championship. You know, people are going to have this conversation, and we have to start with the praise of the Thunder. What Sam Presti has built, even when they couldn't get to that new contract with Billy Donovan, and they promoted Mark Daigneault, and you look at the way that this team wheeled and dealed, they were a team that when they had Kevin Durant, when they had James Harden, when they had Russell Westbrook, they were a team that was on the verge of winning a championship, right? They got to the NBA Finals up against the Heat. They couldn't get the job done. We know in Durant's final season, they blew that big lead to the Warriors, and it was a changing of the guard there in Oklahoma City where many people could have thought that was their best chance to ever win a championship. And you have this team moving from Seattle to Oklahoma. And what were they going to become after that? And Russell Westbrook stayed there for a little bit, obviously. They had teams that would be in the playoffs. But, you know, you ended up bringing in Paul George, too. They had some teams, when you looked at them, that they were good, but you never really thought they were going to win a championship. So through time, Sam Presti said, we got to go make a move. We got to go acquire as many assets as possible, and we got to really build this thing back up. And we got to build this thing back up via trades, and we got to build this thing back up via the draft. Because the odds of us landing a star in free agency, when you've had Kevin Durant leave, when you had to say goodbye to Paul George, were probably not good. And the move that changed that franchise was trading Paul George to the Clippers and then getting back Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And remember where Shai Gilgeous-Alexander played? He played at Kentucky. How many times do we see people, whether it's at Duke, whether it's at Kentucky, when there are other stars on the team that get more of the headlines, get more of the attention, and there ends up being players. And this really it's a credit, a testament to Calipari, where you look at some of the other guys, they're not as mainly featured in college because of how the other players are perceived to be better, and they're still able to go on and have these wonderful careers. And Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, not only has he gone on to have a wonderful career, guy was a scoring champion, guy was the NBA MVP, and now was the finals MVP. You look at what he's done. You can make a case today that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is the second best player in the league. I'm still saying Nikola Jokic is one. Look, that Nuggets team had no business taking that Thunder team to a Game 7, and they were able to do so. But I think what happened last night and securing that championship, and I love Giannis Antetokounmpo, but I think Giannis Antetokounmpo is now the third best player in the league. Shai has moved up into that second spot, and then Nikola Jokic is one. But that SGA trade just wasn't it. Like, just getting SGA and him developing into a star, no longer a budding star, he is a superstar in this league, that wouldn't have been enough to change around the direction of this franchise. You look at what they're able to do in drafting Jalen Williams. Let's be real. We had Jalen Williams' college coach on. Did anyone think that Jalen Williams is going to turn out to be not only a number two piece on a championship team, but one of the better younger players in the league, right? When they drafted him, the fact that he was a 12th overall pick, a guy that had zero Power 5 scholarship offers, that's a remarkable story in its own. But how many times does a 12th overall pick in the NBA amount to be nothing? This guy, every year he gets better, and you look at the 40-point performance he had in one of the NBA Finals games to put him up 3-2, it's insane what this guy has turned into. And you look at Chet Holmgren, who is still growing into his body, and he needs to put on some muscle, but you see the defensive ability and the all-around ability of a Chet Holmgren. Now, there's other guys that you can mention, too, on this team. Trading for Caruso was smart. You look at the way that Dort can play. He's a very good player. But you look at this Thunder team, and they're teams that win their first championship, right? We've had seven new champions in the last 7 years. But when a group like this wins their first championship, like Oklahoma City, there's two different thoughts that happen. The first thought is, oh, maybe it was a one-time wonderful experience and they'll never win another championship. Right? That could be one. Or the other is, this is the start of something special. This is the start of multiple championships. And when I look at the Oklahoma City Thunder, I think it's the latter. You know, a lot of people today are going to say, are the Thunder one of the greatest teams ever? Like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you they had a top five all-time great season. They have a resume to put them in that conversation. When you look at 68 wins in the regular season, you then see 84 total victories for the entirety of the season, regular season and postseason, and 64 of those were double digits. They were an insanely dominant team. Am I ready to call them a top five team of all time? No. But what this championship is, and obviously you celebrate this championship and you love this championship and you always remember this championship, but they never win another one, yeah, I'll be disappointed. But this is something that you're going to remember forever. But this championship, which it's already special right now, it has the ability to age even better. Because this could be the start of maybe a dynastic run. This could be the start of back-to-back championships. This could maybe be the start of two championships in, let's say, 3 or 4 years. Maybe it turns out to be 3 and 6. But there are some times when a team wins a championship for the first time that you know it's not going to happen again. Other times, though, it turns into a run like what we saw with the Lakers, like what we saw with the Warriors, like what we saw with the San Antonio Spurs. Like, don't get me wrong, when the Warriors won their first championship defeating Cleveland, did anyone think that the Warriors were definitely going to become a dynasty? I did it. And we know what ended up happening. They win that 73-game regular season, and then they lose in the NBA Finals. They blow that 3-1 lead to Cleveland, and then they went and got Durant, and they became just unbeatable. But you look at this Oklahoma City team in the moment, it was obviously a special season. Duh, they won a championship. Obviously, they are a great team. But this championship, we may look back on it in 10 years, and we may say, oh my God, that was really the start of a heck of a run. Because when you have a big three of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Jalen Williams, and then also Chet Holmgren, and they fall in the age range of 23 to 26, just one championship isn't good enough. Now, that's not me taking away from what the Thunder did. Let me be clear. Because the entire year, people tried to discredit the Thunder. People tried to find a reason why the Thunder couldn't win it all. All right? They did. Boston's going to repeat. Oh, the Cavs are a really great young team. Oh, look at the Knicks. Look what they're doing. And then in the Western Conference, oh, the Warriors traded for Jimmy Butler. Oh, the Lakers traded for Luka Doncic. Oh, the Rockets are a young up-and-coming team. Oh, the Clippers are healthy. Don't let them be healthy come postseason time. Oh, the Minnesota Timberwolves, right, with Anthony Edwards. Look how many teams we tried to say had a chance to beat the Thunder. When in reality, not only did this team, all they did was win. They won, and they beat the snot out of you. And that's why I thought it was very fitting that they won that championship last night by 12 points, as predicted, by the way, that they won that championship by double digits, because that was their 64th win of the season by double digits. Think about that. Like, you look at that number 64. In the regular season, the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are the second-best team in the NBA this year, they just had 64 regular season wins. The Thunder had 64 wins this year when you factor in the postseason by double digits. It's just stupid. And you get to the Halliburton injury now. That even factors on to this team potentially even being more dynastic. You know, or this team maybe starting a dynasty. And a dynasty's three, to be clear. And there's still a lot of work to do. But they do give off this Thunder team a lot of San Antonio Spurs vibes. And I said that to Antonio Daniels, and he agreed with it. Now, did we just put the cart before the horse? Absolutely. But that's where these conversations happen. And the Halliburton injury, let's get to it. And you look at this postseason, you saw Damian Lillard with the Achilles injury. You saw Jason Tatum with the Achilles injury. And last night, you saw Halliburton with the Achilles injury. And on Tuesday, when we found out from Shams Charania, I remember we played the audio and we talked about it right away. And when Tuesday we found out that he was going for an MRI on a calf injury, I turned to Samter, and I remember Samter, he gave me like this crazy look because I was saying, remember when Kevin Durant had the calf injury and it turned into the Achilles tear? And it sent a chill up Samter's spine because that was an awful moment to see in the NBA Finals. And I remember talking about this on Tuesday, how it's easy for me to sit here and say, oh, Halliburton has to play. Right? Yeah, in the NBA Finals, you have to play. But it's also another thing to acknowledge what the risk was. Because this was such a special season for the Pacers. This was an unbelievable, really unprecedented run when you kind of look at the numbers on what Halliburton was able to do round in and round out and have a moment in each one where they had some improbable comeback. And even in the NBA Finals, where they lost, what he did in game one, what was ridiculous. But you knew that there was a risk that if Halliburton goes down and he has this injury, well, then he's going to be out all of next season. And I said that on Tuesday. And look now, I know in the NBA, we usually talk about load management. You know, I always say there's too many games. You got to have an appreciation for Halliburton playing through the pain. And I understand some people will sit there and go, oh, it's irresponsible. I understand some people are going to sit there and say, oh, come on, Zach. He should be playing even if he's banged up. You run that risk in game six. You run that risk in game seven. But now Halliburton, in all likelihood, is going to be out all of next season. And that's the third time this postseason with, by the way, the player wearing the number zero. Lillard, Tatum, Halliburton. All injuries, all Achilles tears in the postseason. And now you enter next season. And even before next season could start, the Pacers are already wounded with Halliburton. The Celtics are already wounded with Jason Tatum. And you have the Bucks. I think Giannis will still be there. But you already have them wounded with Damian Lillard. And you never know how players are going to be able to recover from an Achilles injury. So you look at that. Not only does that make the East more wide open, but it puts more pressure on teams like the Knicks and teams like the Cavs. And you know what? Even younger teams that haven't taken that next step yet, but have been in the postseason, like the Magic, who just made a big trade, and they have Paolo Banchero, and also the Pistons, who had a good season this year with Cade Cunningham. But as we sit here right now, and you said, Zach, without knowing how the rest of the offseason is going to play on out, without knowing when those three stars you just mentioned are to come back, if they come back at all, who are the two teams think of immediately that have a chance to get out of the East to the NBA Finals? Yeah, it's the Knicks and the Cavs. And if they don't win next year with this core, then they're not going to win. They're not going to win a championship with the way that they're currently constructed. And also, you look at the West, show you have now a full year of Luka and LeBron. Yeah, the Rockets just got Kevin Durant. Sure, you'll see Jimmy Butler for a full season with the Golden State Warriors. You know, we'll see if the Clippers, if they could be healthy. You keep on looking around in the Western Conference, and obviously there's teams that I'm not mentioning. But Oklahoma City and Denver, you know, now with the new coach and a GM. But going into next year, the Thunder not only are the favorite in the West, they're the favorite in the entire league, and it's not even close. Because now you can't doubt the Thunder. Not only do you have all these other injuries around the rest of the league, but you can't doubt the Thunder. Where all year long, we sat here and people tried to doubt the Thunder. Now the Thunder have a championship. So you can't tell me this team doesn't have championship experience. You can't tell me this team's not ready. And you look at it going into next year, you know, in the Eastern Conference, you look at the Cavs, the Celtics, the Knicks, the Pacers, the Bucks, the Pistons, the Magic, you know, the Sixers if they can get healthy. Maybe Miami makes a move. Do any of those teams, with the way that those teams are currently constructed or with the way that those teams aren't healthy right now, do you feel confident that any of them are going to be able to beat the Oklahoma City Thunder in a 7-game series? I don't. And who's the team in the Western Conference right now that you feel like can go toe-to-toe for them? Toe-to-toe with them and beat them in a 7-game series. I'm not saying it's a guarantee, right? The Thunder get hurt next year. It could happen. But this Thunder team, what they did this year was so special. The way that they fought through everyone doubting them was incredible. They play unbelievable defense. Their big three falls in the range of 23 to 26. And what they just had was a great season. A great season. Am I going to sit here and tell you it's a top five NBA season of all time? No. But this championship, when you look at 68 regular season wins, 84 total wins, 64 of those coming by double digits, it has the potential to age into something that's even more special than the way that we're talking about it right now. Because this could be the appetizer for multiple championships to come. Because this Thunder team, this does not have the feeling of, oh, they're just a one-time magical winner where cherish this for the rest of your life because it's never going to happen again with this group. If this team doesn't win at least one more championship, I'm going to be significantly disappointed. And who knows? Maybe they do turn out to be the next era of the San Antonio Spurs. Maybe that's what's happening right now in Oklahoma City. It's possible. And what they did was they won the championship when everyone said they couldn't this year and it wasn't their time, even when all they did was kick your ass and win games. And now no one could say that about them. No one could enter next year by saying, oh, this team, well, we don't know if they have enough experience. We don't know if they have what it takes. They've done it. And that's what this championship this year can turn into. It could be the start of this team really winning a bunch of championships and a team that's very likable right now turn it into a team that we dislike in a few years. Because guess what happens? You win all these championships, in the beginning, you're likable. Then after that, people get tired of you and people want to see something else. So congratulations to the Oklahoma City Thunder. It is the Zach Gelb Show right here on the Infinity Sports Network. We will take a break when we come on back. Man, yesterday, what a scene that was at Fanatics Fest. Kevin Durant, the trade, it doesn't become official, but it gets leaked out, right? That Kevin Durant has been traded to the Houston Rockets as he was on stage with Taylor Rooks. What does this mean for the future of the Western Conference? And what does this mean for the Houston Rockets? We'll discuss next as the Zach Gelb Show continues on a very busy Monday. Lionel Hollins will join us in an hour from now. John Fanta coming up at 5 p.m. Eastern time. We'll take your calls 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. And you could always get at us on social media, Twitter and Instagram, at Zach Gelb, that's ZACHGELB. But we'll take a time out and we'll come on back after these short messages. By the way, congratulations to our very own Ryan Hickey, who used to be my producer. He joins us now every Wednesday. He's now the producer of the Writer Than You extravaganza. He got engaged over the weekend. And Stu, it's kind of funny because about a month ago, I started really recruiting inside the 345 Hudson Street studios for spots on the Deion Dawkins charity kickball tournament that we participated in over the weekend. And we got some yeses from people in there. Anthony Gallo was a good addition to the team. Stu obviously was a good addition to the team. Carlos with a K did show up. Carlos is always a good vibes guy and always a team player. And I recruited Alex Azarm, who, by the way, my favorite part-timer here at 345 Hudson Street is Nico right now. In the part-timer rankings, Nico would be number one. Azarm was in the circle of trust. He is elevated into 1A after this past weekend. What are you shaking your head about, Santa? Alex Azarm, by the way, has dedication, he has passion, and he has a competitive nature that I didn't know that he had in him. He's a very quiet, polite kid. He was arguing with the refs. He was even jawing with the first baseman, who this first baseman was acting like a jackass, let's be real. I had to like basically put Gallo on a leash and was like, down, boy, down. Calm down, Gallo. Calm down, Anthony Gallo. Because Gallo was like ready to go fight with the first baseman. And the first baseman was being a douche, if we're being honest, on this team. Like, he was standing in the baseline. And I said to him when I was on first base after getting a base hit, dude, You're a little guy compared to me. If you're going to stand in front of me and you happen to fall, that's not my issue. And it's like, it's a charity kickball game. Everyone had to calm down a little bit. But I was very proud of our team's effort. We lost. We played in 5 games. We lost 4, which people are going to say, oh, Zach, what are you doing, moral victories? We lost in the most horrific fashion. Every game we lost, we had a lead. We blew it in the last inning, and then we got a lead back in extras, and we still couldn't get the job done. But we were a much better team than we were last year. You know, EJ wasn't on the team, so he didn't blow out his patella tendon. Maggie and Perloff, I guess they weren't as good as what I thought they were going to be last year because we replaced them with Gallo, Stu, Azarum, and Carlos. Oh, Carlos McKay was on the team last year. And I know we had a better showing here. But I was good with our effort. And the team that we lost to twice ended up winning the championship, and we lost to them both times in extra innings. So we were a few plays away from maybe actually going on and winning this tournament. But I thought we made an improvement. And next year, the scouting process has already began. And we are sitting here, and I told Azarum he's got to bring 2 friends next year. Because Azarum, if we, you know what, Maggie, can we use your husband next year? Because if we take Alex Azarum and Maggie's husband and put him on the team, and Azarum then brings 2 friends, I legitimately think that we could win this entire thing. Now, there may need to be some difficult conversations. There may need to be some roster cuts. But as the captain and the manager of the team, I'm willing to potentially do what's in the best interest of the ball club. But anyway, we asked Hickey a month ago to do this team on the air. And Hickey, in a weird way, he's like, oh, I'm busy that day. Can't do it. And he just wasn't smooth about it. And when I worked with Hickey, Ack would always joke, oh, when are you getting engaged, Chief? When are you getting engaged? And I just said to Hickey, oh, what, are you getting engaged? And he was as white as a ghost. So I didn't want to press him on the situation on the air because if, God forbid, he was getting engaged and, you know, I don't think his girlfriend is listening. When we used to work together, she probably used to listen. But when he just comes on every Wednesday in the middle of a work day, I'm not expecting her to listen. But I didn't want to be that guy that ruined the engagement. And lo and behold, before the first game, I turned to Stu and I go, you know, whatever happened with Hickey? And Stu goes, well, you were right. He is getting engaged right now. So congratulations to Hot Take Hickey. We will get the whole story on Wednesday as we will interrogate him on what actually happened during the whole engagement. Now, let me ask you this, Stu. How are you feeling? Because yesterday I was incredibly sore.
Yeah, yesterday was tough. I was very sore yesterday. I feel better today.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm still playing hurt. In the first inning, I made a diving catch. And this is when I'm starting to realize that I'm getting older. My left leg off that diving catch is in an intense amount of pain. Like, I don't think there's any damage or anything. I just think it's sore. And there was a lot of me to fall on that field. And when I made that catch, oh boy, I felt my knee just like kind of smash into that turf. And it was not a good feeling. I also did something stupid. After the tournament, I got back to Penn Station. And I walked from Penn Station to Financial District after playing a full day of kickball. It was an intense tournament, though. It was a fun time out in Rahway, New Jersey. We appreciate a college buddy of mine, Deion Dawkins, having us be a part of the conversation. We also had a good show moment, I would say, Stu and I. So this kickball is enormous, Stu, right? And it's not as easy as it is to catch. And this thing is, it's coming in hot. And earlier, it was in the same inning where a ball was in center field. And I like misread it, or I thought it was coming right down. And then I'm like, oh boy, this is going over my head. And our right fielder, this kid Patrick, ended up coming over and making the catch. The next pitch, the ball goes to left field. So it was in just kind of my memory from what just happened right before. The reaction was, oh, let me just go back behind Stu, because I was playing center field, which next year I'm just putting myself at first base. Too much running in this whole thing, if I'm just being honest. And I go, let me just like cover Stu. And the ball is going right towards Stu. And I kid you not, this ball is bigger than Stu. This ball is like bigger than from your chest up. And the ball bounces right off Stu's chest. And it goes all the way up in the air. It's kind of like the Halliburton shot. It hit off the rim against the Knicks, goes all the way up in the air. And then I was there to just catch the kickball here. So that was a good show moment for us. Well, I'll give that as an assist to you, Stu.
Yeah, I'll take the assist on that, other than the error I made in the first game
where
the ball went over my head.
It's all right. It happens. But it was a good tournament. It was a whole lot of fun. But geez, I don't think that there was no major injuries, right? No one got banged up.
I know. Okay. Gallo said his toe was hurting. Whatever
I'm
that means.
I'm surprised his jaw's not hurting from all the trash talk he was doing. So Gallo has a little toe injury. All right, he'll be fine. He'll eat a pinoli cookie or two, and he'll be good. So congratulations, by the way, to Ryan Hickey, who we are already recruiting for the kickball tournament next year, and hopefully he's just not getting married next year on the week of the tournament. If that's the case, then he's just starting to duck us. He's like John Jones. He's just ducking us.
Even so, he's out.
Why?
Because he can't afford an injury for the wedding.
No.
Unless he's getting married, like, in October. Like, he can't afford a torn Achilles or a torn quad.
Here's the thing. I think Hickey's now fiance is very understanding. I think she will let him do a good amount of things. And also, Ryan is in good shape. Ryan's not going to be like E.J. Stewart, who tears his patella tendon in a charity kickball
game. You'd
be surprised,
though. These things happen. Yeah. $10 says she does not let him.
Only $10? Yeah, well, come on, Hack. You got a lot of money. Bet a little bit more there, why don't we, Chief?
You're higher on the salary scale. Yeah.
You've been here a long time now.
It doesn't work that way.
Let's investigate that 401k that the Ackman has.
That helps, yes.
Yeah. Let's get to Fanatics Fest yesterday. So this is Kevin Durant finding out live at Fanatics Fest about the trade to the Houston Rockets.
You're headed to Houston. How does that sound?
So there you go. You have Kevin Durant on stage with Taylor Rooks. And the fans just start yelling, "Yo, bro, you got traded. You got traded." And then eventually they did have to acknowledge it. And that's a win for Michael Rubin and Fanatics Fest. And by the way, I'd like to thank Michael Rubin who had us out of Fanatics Fest. I had no clue what to expect. And I was there over the weekend. I was blown away. I really was. And it takes a lot to impress me with some of the events that we're able to go to when it comes to sports, because I've been fortunate enough to see a lot and go to some awesome events. That I didn't know what to expect. That event is a home run. Even if you don't buy all the autographs and sit in line and get all the pictures of everyone, just walking around, you legitimately did not know what you were going to see from step to step inside the entirety of the Javits Center. And for them to get that moment with Kevin Durant basically getting traded at the event, I thought that was very cool. Now, in terms of the trade, I think that the Suns did as good as they could with the circumstances. Durant didn't want to go to Minnesota. The Miami Heat, Pat Riley thought he could, and Pat Riley, his ego is already enough. And I think that he still, because of the greatness that he has, he still thinks he has the cachet in 2025. I don't think that's the case anymore. You know, Pat thinks he could just strong arm people into things. You weren't getting Durant into Miami with what you were offering. But you look at the Suns, considering how Durant was really running point on this, Jalen Green is the big piece of this deal. The second, the 5 second-round picks, who cares? I know someone will tweet me, "Oh, Nikola Jokic was a second-round pick. He got drafted during a Taco Bell commercial." So the odds of those second-round picks really amounting to something are slim. Even the 10th overall pick, I think, is a crapshoot. Like, could it end up being someone good? Yeah. But usually after the NBA draft, after the first 5 or 6 picks, we're all like, who? Even last year, people are Zachary Rasashir, when he got drafted, like, who's that? So you look at it, and Bum Brooks was also thrown into the deal. But really, it was Jalen Green for Durant, who's a young player, and now you know that. I don't even know if the front office really wanted him. I didn't even know if ownership really wanted Kevin Durant. But I said this from the start, that Ime Udoka wanted KD. And we knew that last year, and we knew that obviously this year, and now we finally got him. And with Sagoon and also Thompson, that's a team that you look at what just happened with the Thunder, and obviously the Thunder, their entirety of their big three are young. Durant is older. But that's a team now that you see what the Thunder just did, and you just finished in second in the Western Conference, and now you get KD. And say what you want about KD, and trust me, we have criticized KD a ton since leaving the Golden State Warriors. But that is a team that they go into next year with championship expectations. I'm not saying they're going to win a championship. I'm not. But that's a team that it's not impossible to envision them playing really deep into the postseason next year. And Durant's got to stay healthy. You got a young core. And Ime Udoka is one of the better coaches in the league. I thought it was a fine move by the Rockets. I thought it was a good move from the Rockets. If you just give up Jalen Green, that's fine. And that's pretty much what they did. And for the Suns, you get a younger player, and now you got to tear this entire thing down, and we'll see how quickly you could build it up. But for the Thunder, I think the Thunder kind of rain on both of these teams. The Thunder, and I know that it's not always going to work. Hey, look at what Hinkie did, and Hinkie never related to the media like Presti did, and Hinkie also never had that ability to show you when that plan was going to move forward, and he missed on some big draft picks, Okafor, Nerlens Noel. I know the guy won the Rookie of the Year, but Michael Carter-Williams, you know, Hinkie missed on a ton of draft picks. But you look at what Presti did, that kind of lays the foundation for what a team like the Suns should do, and you do have Booker there. And then you see a team like the Rockets, well, you had a young core, and I know that, right, the veteran move that the Thunder made was Caruso, and Durant is a much better player than Caruso, but they had a young group. That one probably earlier than what most people thought was going to happen in the NBA. So now if you're the Rockets, you probably go into next year saying, why can't it be us? All right, it is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. We will take a timeout when we come on back. Tom Brady actually had more of a say in the Raiders QB process than he led on to believe. We'll tell you what was cooking there as we look at what the Raiders ultimately did end up deciding on this offseason, as Brady did oppose one quarterback in particular. So we'll get to that on the other side, but update time first. Here he is, the Ackman, Rich Ackerman. I got a trivia question for you, but first, let me start our Ask the Pros question of the day preview, and it's time to Ask the Pros. You, the listener, get to ask us a question brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simply tweet your question at INFSportsNet or at Zach Gelb. Using the hashtag Ask the Pros, be listening later in the show, we might answer your question. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Last night, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander became the fourth player in the history of the NBA to win the scoring title, the NBA MVP, and an NBA title in the same season. Scoring title, NBA MVP, and an NBA title in the same season. Who are the other three? You guys want to take a guess? Yes, Michael Jordan. You want to take a guess how many times Michael Jordan did it?
Six.
Did it four times. 91, 92, 96, 98. He's the only person out of the four who have done it that have done so multiple times. So can we get the other two?
Let's go with Shaq.
Is that what you were going to guess, Stu?
I was not going to guess Shaq.
Oh, who were you going to guess?
I was going to guess Kareem.
All righty. Well, nice little teamwork right there. Sampson's correct with Shaq in 2000. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar did so in 1971. That's a great list for SGA to be on. If you look at it, you got Michael Jordan, the GOAT. You have Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who is obviously top three player of all time. I think most people would go number one Michael, number two LeBron, number three Kareem. And then you get Shaq, who is not only one of the greatest big men that we've ever seen, but one of the greatest personalities that this game has ever seen. So when you could join a list, and it's not just, oh, like he did something in a 10-game stretch, right? We're talking about scoring title, MVP, and NBA title. Think about that. Kareem, Michael, Shaq, and SGA. So if anyone tries to take away from SGA, that's the graphic that you show them. That's the thing that you say to them. And am I sitting here telling you that SGA is going to become Kareem, or he's going to become Michael, or he's going to become Shaq in the all-time history? No, I'm not. But who knows what this could turn into be. Like, if they go win three more championships, and SGA go wins a few more MVPs and a few more finals MVPs, it's not crazy. Like, if they go on to be the Spurs, look how highly we rate Tim Duncan. So who knows what this could turn into for SGA. And I also saw that Rachel Nichols, she had a tweet last night, which I guess this has been getting blowback. She goes, SGA last night just secured a spot in the Hall of Fame. She's 100% right. And I think her reasoning was there's only one NBA MVP to not be in the Hall of Fame. And that's Derrick Rose, who obviously his career was marred with injuries. But I think people forget the Hall of Fame, which is for the totality of your basketball career, not just what you did in the NBA. And obviously the only reason SGA would be there is because of what he did in the NBA. But if you look at what SGA has done already in short order, like how many guys have you looked at that you look at the Hall of Fame and you go, they're in the NBA, well, not the NBA Hall of Fame, the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall, whatever the heck they call it. So I don't get why people are like freaking out with Rachel Nichols tweeted the other night. I think she's 100% right. So a good little trivia question right there. All righty, Stu, we go from Shaq in 2000 with your Lakers to your Raiders in the year of 2025. I was reading this story over the weekend, and it revealed from, it revealed from Michael Silver that maybe there was a time where the Raiders were interested, or at least thought maybe we'll kick the tires on Sam Darnold and signing Sam Darnold. Mike Silver of The Athletic, regarding quarterback Sam Darnold's latest fresh start in Seattle, Silver reports the Raiders minority owner Tom Brady didn't want to pursue Darnold as the team's next quarterback. So Darnold got, what, a three-year contract? Basically, it was $55 or $60 million guaranteed, something like that. Because they got in that fight with Gary Myers over it, how it's still a prove-it type of deal, and it's not as long of a commitment as what Gary thought it was going to be. But Gary didn't want to listen to logic there. But if you could have got Geno Smith with the way that you got him, or Sam Darnold, who would you rather have, Stu, on a three-year commitment, which would be to Sam Darnold?
I think Geno Smith. I think Geno Smith is slightly better as a quarterback. Mm-hmm. The only argument I think is that he's obviously 6 years older than Darnold, so maybe there's more of a question about what Darnold can maybe grow a little more into, but I don't think it's that much to where I would pick him over Geno.
It's only a six-year difference?
It's only six. Geno's 34 and Darnold's 28.
Jeez. Geno Smith, I feel like he's been around forever.
Yeah.
I know he's been around for a long time, but... Well, yeah, I guess Sam Darnold, if you look at it, he went from the Jets to the Panthers. Was the 49ers, I think it was the other stop? Yeah, I think it was the 49ers. And then Minnesota, and now he's on the Seattle Seahawks. So you'd rather have Geno Smith?
I'd rather have Geno Smith, yeah.
I think they're very similar. Now, let's be real. The situation Geno was in last year, okay, they did have DK Metcalf and this familiarity, even though they had a new coach come in, still from familiarity with the organization. You had DK Metcalf, you had Tyler Lockett, you had Jackson Smith and Jigba. Even though that's a nice trio, the situation Sam Darnold was a lot better. You had an established coach, you had the best receiver in the league, yeah, Jordan Addison, and you also got to play inside. Now, here's the thing with the Raiders. The Raiders are in a tricky spot because they moved on from Carl those years ago, which was the right move, but it was their plan afterwards. They didn't have any concepts of a plan. Like, you look back at the Raiders, they wanted Brady. Brady retired. For whatever reason, they didn't want to go get Aaron Rodgers. So they ended up bringing in Jimmy G, and I don't even know if that was a lateral move. It's a lateral move at best. But in all likelihood, I know that Jimmy G was in a Super Bowl. It's probably a slight downgrade. And Jimmy G also has had a litany of injuries. So that was a disaster. Now McDaniels is long gone. Antonio Pierce is now long gone. And you're bringing in Pete Carroll, who is on borrowed time. And Pete Carroll's job is to just get the organization moving in the right direction again. It's really not to win. It's not like going to the playoffs. Like, if you get the playoffs, yeah, it's gravy. You know, if you can win a playoff game, he'll be a god there. It just return them to respectability. Lay a foundation where the next guy that comes in then could go do something special there in a division which is a gauntlet right now with the Chiefs, with the Broncos and the Chargers, and all three of those guys, regardless of what you think of a Herbert or a Bo Nix, they have their quarterbacks. And we know Mahomes is the best quarterback still in the league. So with all that being said, I understand there's familiarity there with Gino. On a three-year deal where it's really a one-year deal if you need it to be with the way that that contract is structured, like to experiment and mess around with Geno Smith for 2 years, I would have just rather have done that with Sam Darnold for 2 years. And I'm not even this big believer that Sam Darnold's going to be good, but he's the younger quarterback, and I'd rather the younger quarterback here. Now, do I think in a win-loss perspective, is it that much of a difference, Sam Darnold, Geno Smith? No. So that's why I would prefer the younger quarterback. But if the Raiders, like Stu, I don't think the Raiders are going to be horrible this year.
No, I think they'll win like 7 or 8 games. The schedule's kind of tough, and the division's tough. But
I know it's never a guarantee, a slam dunk in the draft that you get your quarterback. Just because if you're a horrible team, like look at the guys that we're talking about, especially with Sam Darnold. But if I'm the Raiders, you got Brock Bowers, you got Ashton Jeanty, you have Max Crosby. You know, if they win 7-8 games, you're not going to be picking in the top 5. Now, could you move up? Sure. Could you wheel and deal? Sure. But if I'm the Raiders, I would rather just want to be as bad as possible. As bad as possible. And be picking in the top 3 of the draft next year. That's what the Raiders need to have happen to them. Wouldn't it be crazy? And I don't know if Arch Manning's going to come out of college, to be fair. But you have that Brady Manning rivalry for all those years with Eli and, more importantly, also Peyton. But Eli also prevented Tom from winning 2 more Super Bowls. Imagine if Arch ends up linking up with Tommy Brady. But Brady can't tell you that he's no involvement with the Raiders QB plan. Like, oh, why did Shador fall? You love Shador. And Brady has involvement. And not going after Sam Darnold kind of proves that. News brief coming up next. Lionel Hollins at 420. John Fant at 5. All Eastern time right here on the Zach Gelb Show.